There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
You know that I feel like it's really important to express yourself.
I know that about you.
You got to put your true self out there, okay? And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do just that.
Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean, literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know, it doesn't get more comfortable than Croc clogs and sandals. They're just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Cool. Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
Beautiful day here in New York City, where we both live.
Likely story. By the
Likely
way,
story.
Couple things. It is a beautiful day in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this is a perfect little addendum to really anything.
Mm-hmm.
Matt is bringing back, we're both bringing back Likely Story.
Likely Story is back as a phrase.
You can sort of tack it onto anything.
Yeah, whenever anyone says anything that's a little bit questionable, you can just turn to, let's say, your friend. Like, I would turn to Bone and I would say, Likely Story.
Likely Story.
And it's going to bring down the house. You're welcome.
There's also an element of, like, auto commentary where you can say something and then add it yourself. Like,
Likely Story.
Likely Story.
Like, I'm going to make it to the gym today.
Likely Story.
Likely Story.
It really is so versatile, powerful.
Power verse.
It's a perfect little spice to anything you say.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to sort of seem interesting. Listen, something's going on with me. I am going through this crazy bout of social anxiety, and I don't want it to be another, like, woe is me, Bowen moment, but something's going on just as the
likely
weather
story.
Is warming up. Well, I was going to say, as the weather's warming up, my social anxiety is kicking in, likely story.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just how it goes, I think.
Totally.
I'm way more socially anxious in Los Angeles than I am in New York City.
That tracks, likely story.
Likely story. And I think it's because in New York City, and I'm also talking about my girls, Brooklyn and Queens, okay? I'm roping everybody in.
Yeah.
They're sort of like escape routes. You know what I mean? And also, like, in New York, there's so many different kinds of people, where in LA, there's not. And
yeah.
So that's sort of all saying that.
Well, our guest happens to be there, and he's making a face, and...
Here's my thing about the guest. One of my favorite occupants of Los Angeles.
Oh, that is high praise? Question mark?
Not only is it a likely story, it's a true story.
That is really, really nice. I agree. I've never seen our guest in like an LA context.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that were I to see him.
He doesn't really give LA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's get into that with him because I feel like, how does that work? You know?
Well, I don't know. And it's crazy because we're literally talking to him in the most LA atmosphere you can possibly be in, which is Vanessa Hudgens' old home. So the guest owns Vanessa Hudgens' old home. It's now his home, likely story.
Likely story.
And it's actually kind of crazy because he logs onto the Zoom and he's sort of is sitting in this sort of what I can only call gorgeous setting. And I complimented him on the wallpaper. And he said, I didn't pick this out. Vanessa Hudgens picked this out.
Mm.
And that's just one of the many topics we're going to get into on today's episode of Las Culturistas with our guest. And that's a likely story, Bo.
Absolutely. I guess we can ask him, but I wonder if this is the house where she said, people are going to die.
I shouldn't be doing this.
I shouldn't be doing this.
Wait, we have to pull up the video. We have to find out where She said that in the home. I'm sure he knows. Uh-huh. I'm sure he's like locked it down. He does. He's nodding. Look at his cute little smile. He's nodding a cute little smile. And he's now he's ducking out of frame. Smile. Bashful as hell.
Yeah.
Listen, call me David Letterman because our guest really needs no introduction. Podcasting legend, podcasting pioneer, podcasting curator. You know him from Pod Save America and Love It or Leave It. Among so many other things. I mean, this is an icon, podcast icon.
God, one of those people who's like dauntingly funny,
You know? Hashtag actually smart in a
hashtag
real way.
Hashtag actually smart. I know. Yeah. I know. So we'll see how this goes.
We're going to see how it goes.
I might just clam up and really not speak the whole time.
Well, you're so shy. Why are you
so shy?
What do you think? And we talked earlier about maybe you're smoking too much weed.
It's that. It's, I don't know. Like, I find myself losing self-concept, proprioception. I don't know how I'm moving around in the world. It's that. I need to talk to my therapist about it.
Google's proprioception.
Therapist says proprioception once. Bowen Yang uses it for the rest of his life. That's where I got it from. My therapist used that on me.
Likely story. Okay, so I think at this point is the sort of part where we bring in the guest. Everyone, please welcome into your ears, John Lovett. Wow.
King. Wow. You know, you listen to this show and you hear about people sitting in silence while you do whatever it is that you just did. And then you live it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's different. You know?
Now, was it better than you ever could have dreamed? Was it better than in your liquid dreams, O-Town?
Yeah, it was. Sure, it was better than my liquid dreams. You know what goes well with Likely Story is Must Be Nice.
Oh, must be nice. Wow.
That's
must
good.
Be Likely Story. Okay, must be nice. Wow. Thanks for collabing with us.
Yeah.
Must Be Nice is good. And for some reason, I switched that out with, and it's not quite as good, but I switched that out with pretty cool, right? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Just a nice little Salt Bay like dash of something.
Yeah. Can I throw something out there? Instead of how about them apples, you just say them apples. No?
Really?
No,
good.
I like
you
it.
Don't like that as
I
much.
Like it.
No, no, it's great. Really good.
I mean, could you give us an example? I'm not seeing it.
When people see that this episode's coming out and John Lovett is finally on Las Culturistas after years of...
Yeah, put a big fucking underline under finally. Jesus Christ. Was Pat Regan for the seventh time not available? I don't understand.
Oh my goodness.
I love Pat. Pat's amazing.
But he has been
on
a lot.
But he must have been busy. He must have been busy.
You know, he's been on recently and this is first time Las Culture guest John Lovett.
Well, John will sort of nag me sometimes because I'm frequently on Love It or Leave It and mm-hmm. I love coming on, especially to play my character of masculinity expert Brad Turbo. That's kind of right. My favorite thing I do on the show. But you're always sort of nagging me because you're like, yeah, well, this is, I guess, your 800th time on the show and I've not been on. But I always used to say I would like to wait for us all to do it in person.
Yeah, that is what you said, which virtually. Is weird. Which is a weird thing to say than not do that.
Likely story.
Well, I don't think this is any lesser of a sort of reality than like if we were in person.
Hmm.
It would be best if we were all in Vanessa's house.
That's what I was just going
to say. That would
be
great. And just to go back to what you were saying, yes, this is where she said that thing that like, look, people are going to die, but like I have to go to the mall. That it happened here. It happened upstairs here. I know the room. Mm-hmm. I found it.
You found it.
I found the spot.
Oh my goodness.
So did you see the house in Architectural Digest? Because she famously showed this house in Architectural Digest, which I then heard is something that celebrities often do when they want to sell their home.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, whoa. Are you confirming this is the case?
I didn't know that either, but that's why they do it. Look, my eyes are open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the thing. You have to stay woke. And the
that is the thing.
And that is the thing. But yes, apparently when they do these house tours and they're like, I can't wait for this tree to grow so big that my children can play under it.
Yeah.
They're full of shit. Lie. It's about to be listed. Yeah. It's going to be listed that very day.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. She had sort of an interesting mural next to the pool. Did you keep that?
Mm-mm.
No, you didn't. Okay.
It's gone. Painted right over it. She was so proud of it. It's gone.
Oh, man.
And you held the brush yourself.
But I replaced it with nothing.
Okay.
Oh. Hmm. So it's just a wall. It's
just white. Just painted
that's
over
great.
It. They're gone.
Hmm.
I don't know.
That's
this,
amazing.
I don't know that I'm the hero in this part of our conversation.
No, I think all you're proving is that you're way more boring than Vanessa Hudgens, who seems
stop.
Fucking rad and awesome and cool. And now here you are painting over her scapes. Jeez.
I'll tell you one other thing, which is... she was getting so much PR crap mailed to this house from brands, so much. And for weeks, if not months, her assistant would come like every 2 weeks and fill up her Mini Cooper to the brim with boxes. And they've barely slowed down, but the assistant has stopped replying. And so I have boxes and boxes of just free crap that's for Vanessa Hudgens in my basement. And when my mother and sister come, they call it the mall. They go down there and they like, ooh, a sarong, you know?
Yeah, it's like a little store. Ooh, look, $2,500 worth of La Mer.
It's nothing that nice. It's like boba ice cream and Instagram sunglasses. It's just absolute. It's an unending river of crap that people are mailing in the hopes that just maybe it might appear in a video in which Vanessa Hudgens is saying that the pandemic isn't a big deal.
Right.
The mall came to me. People didn't have to die.
Right.
Yeah.
The mall came to me. And
you're unboxing these? You're unboxing all of the boxes?
I feel
that's okay.
I'm just wondering if I'm... I would say that I accidentally opened them all thinking they're for me. I think I should say something like that.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Jump scare when you get a package and it says Vanessa Hudgens on it. You know what I mean? Like, does it ever say Vanessa Ann Hudgens? Because famously for a while there, she was Vanessa Ann Hudgens.
I'm not quite sure. It's actually at this point disappointing. It's like... Ugh, it's going to be another like size zero bit of athleisure. You know, what am I supposed to do with this?
Right.
I guess not much.
I don't know. You could make some wall art for the mural.
Yeah.
The erstwhile mural.
Mm-hmm.
She is, I think, maybe one of the most famous ADs ever, which is why I'm still asking about it 11 minutes into the podcast. Now, do you ever go into that area that's sort of not the backyard, but it's next to the backyard? And because I remember she said that sometimes she would use that to just frolic and just dance around and sometimes even do dance contests with her friends. So I'm wondering, do you ever get, you know, Favreau over there to kind of like do a dance contest?
Dance? Yeah,
we do a lot of that. We do interpretive dance night. You know, he's surprisingly limber for someone from Boston. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what excited me about it. The opportunity to have a space for dancing.
Right. Do you ever even go back there? Be real. Tell a likely story.
Of course I do. And I'm so lucky to be here.
Of course.
I believe that the previous owner was Gary Oldman. And so there was a lot of like big 90s screens about, you know, like from an era when, you know, from a pre-iPhone, pre-iPad era,
yes.
When it was like very like one-off big screens with buttons that don't do anything anymore, that connect to nothing, you know?
Oh, yeah. A dock for like a second generation iPod.
Yes.
With a physical wheel. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
Very
of
Gary course. Oldman. Very that, you know? Well, I would die to know what Vanessa Hudgens' Wi-Fi name was. Okay, this is vulnerability hour. Okay, what is the name of your Wi-Fi thing? And what is the password to your Wi-Fi?
So when I moved in, I said hello to the neighbors. And one of the neighbors said, wow, thank you for saying hi. And made a point that Gary Oldman never talked to anybody. And they have it inside of my across the street neighbor have an impression that they do of Gary Oldman.
Because they
saw Gary Oldman on the street and they said to Gary Oldman, hey, we're going to have a barbecue. You know, you're on your neighbor. Do you want to stop by? And he did this. It's not going to work on the podcast, but we can describe
we'll
it.
Describe
he,
it.
Went,
yeah, yeah.
He went like this. He went like this.
Okay, so what Lovett's doing is he's putting his both arms out, sort of doing like a wave that, you know, a decline, but shaking his head with a puckered face.
It's pushing the event so far away. Like, this is completely, you know, like, no, I'm not going to that. And they apparently it's become an inside joke that that's what you do to decline something in that home, a gesture Gary Oldman made probably 10 years ago.
Right.
But doesn't that, I mean, sorry to say, likely story, like, that just tracks as Gary Oldman to me.
Yeah,
it does. Well, when she did it, it was like, oh, my God, I can see it. It was an incredible.
Yeah.
You could see the performance. Yeah.
Well, Gary Oldman is such an amazing actor. And I'm so happy that we've arrived in the part of the podcast where we talk at length about his filmography. Mm-hmm. What's your Wi-Fi thing's name? Because you didn't answer that question and told a different story.
Just say the network if you feel comfortable, but you don't have to indulge me.
That's Real Culture number 88. You don't have to indulge.
You don't have to indulge, man.
It is named after a video game, and that's all I'll say.
What is it? Bowen's Heart is a Rock.
I'll know.
It's named after a game called Outer Wilds. Do you ever play Outer Wilds?
Oh, I never played Outer Wilds.
Gotta play Outer Wilds.
Wait, what is that? What's the genre?
That was an Annapurna game. It was like a very small game. It was like an exploration game. Not Outer Worlds. Outer Wilds. Outer Worlds was like a big open world game. This is Outer Wilds, which is different.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay, great. And then it looks like the person is like from BioShock, but it's just someone in like a, what do you call that?
A suit.
A suit.
Space suit.
A spacesuit, subsuit or something.
Something.
I know for a fact that I'm not alone in my sort of GAY gamer reality, but I feel like it's hard to like find community among other homosexual men about the kinds of video games we like to play, because it feels at this point so individualized. And there is, I think video games are like one of the last places where there is monoculture. And yet even there, it's sort of fragmenting just as any other media.
Well, I do think it's a similar problem. It, you know, there's more experimentation and there's, I do think, kind of more innovation in what a game can be. There's just more variability. You can have a game like Modern Warfare, and then you can have a game where you never press a button and you just explore a world reading letters about a person who died. You know, like that's a pretty big range. But I do think like there's the Marvel type games, Fortnite. And
say more about those. That sounds really fun.
They're the big budget like shooting games. And then you put all those aside and then you have to find like the more indie games or the smaller games or the more cerebral games. And that's sort of where I go. Plus I love I loved Elden Ring. I love BioShock. I love Dark Souls and Bloodborne and those games.
I feel like all of those From Software games are very John Lovett. Yeah.
Do you play them?
I don't. So Matt, these are games that are incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You die constantly.
Yeah.
And I don't work under that feedback loop of like, you failed.
What are you playing?
I am playing the Disney World equivalent of an MMO, which is Final Fantasy XIV.
Mm-hmm.
The designers literally are trying to make it feel like a theme park. Like you're supposed to like log on and it's supposed to be like, you can go do this and do that and do that. And it's great. I did famously buy Matt Rodder's a Switch with Breath of the Wild. How far did you get into it, Matt?
I got into the part where you're sort of in like a big tomb. There's like robot scorpion things attacking you.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I can't figure out how to sort of get out of there. And so it's been frustrating for me so much so that I haven't touched it in a long time. And then I can't stress enough, I couldn't load all the games onto the Switch. I really am not good at tech. I'm not good at it, and it frustrates me. It's probably the same way that you're frustrated by dying 1,000 times in a game. I'm frustrated by turning on the game and finding out I can't play it. You know what I'm saying?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. I think the missing piece, the thing that Matt needs is like just someone to show him like where to put an SD card.
Say and that, then, honey. Right. Say that. What I need is someone to come in here, show me where to put the SD card, darling.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You just slide it in right there. That's
In the slot. I think that's all you really need, Matt, and then you'll be off to the races. But I respect, maybe they're ultimately not for you, and it's okay.
You know what, though, Bowen? Say this. Say the truth. Say the likely true story of this. When we play, like, Mario Kart together, even on the newer systems, I hold my own. It takes me a second, but I'm actually pretty good for someone that doesn't know how.
True story. That is a true story.
I just feel like on a lot of the newer systems, and again, this is me saying it as like sort of a pedestrian now at this point, but as someone who definitely identified as a little gamer when I was young, like in a major way, I feel everything's gotten more complicated. Yes, of course, it's all gotten more dynamic and like, you know, one could even just say things have gotten better. Like the worlds are bigger, they're more interesting, they're more visually appealing, they're more stimulating, etc. There's more characters and more to explore. But also I kind of miss back in the day when it was like Super Smash Brothers on GameCube, when it was like you started out with, I think, 8 to 10 people, you could unlock characters and then that was it. It's like, it just feels like it's all so much now. And the muchness is what kind of like, I don't love as much because like, I don't know, like I feel like an old man now, because whenever I just see Pac-Man, I'm like, thank God. I know exactly what I got to do. Mama has to eat. And if she dies, she's going to spin in a circle and be no more.
Oh my God.
Straightforward.
And it's the saddest thing.
Yeah, because it's life and death.
That's the thing. The game has such high highs because you can eat a ghost.
Right.
But then it has these really low, devastating moments. Where a ghost that's not a ghost that's not vulnerable eats you.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also a larger, I think, message about vulnerability.
The clown comes back to bite in many ways.
Well, it's that you can eat the ghost when they're scared, but when they're not scared, you cannot.
So would you say that when you're eating the ghost, that's doing clownery? And that when the ghost eats you, the clown has come back to bite?
I think that's right. Here's what I think. I think that there was a key moment. And here's the key moment. I think the key moment
Tell
is
us.
when Sony and Nintendo decided that there weren't going to be just one trigger for each finger, but two.
Oh my God.
And I think that that moment, if you weren't there to learn that divide between like when they went from, I think it's either PlayStation to PlayStation 2 or 2 to 3, when Nintendo added the Z1, when there was like the second
ZR,
triggers.
I think there
are people that just, they never crossed that bridge and now they don't know how to get there, you know?
That's so interesting. Because I feel like the first moment of like pure alienation by a video game company was Nintendo giving you N64 controllers where it had three handles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When they built that for people with three arms and they never explained their mistake or took ownership or accountability
for it. You're
alienating
so many people. Everyone
else
doesn't
have
three arms.
I thought it was so cunt. I loved that controller. I thought it was K-U-N-T and it served that.
I think we all thought so, but then once you... Like, in theory, it's cunt, but then when you use it... And then, John, the fact that there's a Z trigger on N64 controllers is mm-hmm. what fucked us.
That's how little guys learn how to finger.
That's how little guys learn how to finger. And then that branches off into two triggers on each side.
Yes, and there was no way to ever... You never used it the way it seemed like it was meant to be used. You never grabbed it symmetrically. You
no.
always had one your left hand on the middle zone where the joystick was. Oh, you didn't.
No, I don't know what this is. And it may actually even trace back to the way I hold a pen is weird for some reason. Like, Bowen, have you noticed this? Because some people will make an issue of it with me when they watch me handwrite. I guess you don't watch
me. How do you hold a pen?
Okay, where is the pen?
My middle finger kind of, my middle arch kind of gets a little too high.
This is how I hold a pen.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
And you see how like I'm not using all my fingers and they don't converge at the same point. I'm like resting the pen on what is actually my middle finger. And I think this is actually the way a lefty holds a pen. And so as a result of writing left to right and holding a pen this way, frequently throughout my handwriting career, which really took place between the ages of 4 and 18, when I was really handwriting a lot, and let's call it grade school, I would have ink all over,
ooh.
I guess, my middle ring and pinky finger from like the ink not drying and just the way I naturally hold a pen. Humiliating and something I had to contend with in my life.
Yeah, that sounds really hard. Thank you for telling us about it.
Yeah. I don't know if that's why I would hold the left and right prong on the N64 controller because I just hold things different than like other girls. Like, I'm not like other girls.
Right.
I think it's hard to think of it as a cause. It could be connected. Maybe there's a separate cause for both, but I don't think it's a cause. I don't think the way you hold a pen is the reason you hold a controller that way. I think they're unrelated, probably. Just being honest.
You think I'm just different. You think I'm different and valid.
Yeah. I think you march to the beat of your own drummer, a phrase I love.
You like that?
Do you really?
Love it. Yeah, I use it all.
Likely story.
Likely story.
Wait, if you were known for as someone who said like, and they marched to the beat of their own drummer, that would actually be major.
I also say all the time, they broke the mold with that one.
Do you like that?
I love that one. And it seems unrelated, but don't have to tell me twice.
Don't have to tell me
no,
twice is really good.
That's really mm-hmm. good.
What do I say a lot? There's definitely like prepositions I use a lot on this podcast. And Bowen, I think, says, here's the thing. I think I say, here's the thing. I feel like I hear that in your voice. I feel like I hear, here's the thing.
In my voice?
Yes. If there are tics that we have, I guess the readers, the Katies, the finalists, and the publicists would be the ones to like confirm what those are.
Oh, here's what I try to consciously work in, and I don't find too many opportunities to. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Perfect example.
Perfect example! Oh my God, that's good.
Perfect example.
It's really good.
The person just sounds smart when they use it.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
Hey, Las Culturistas listeners, we're here to tell you that there's no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy.
Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion.
It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com, then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas.
There's a lot of pressure around gifting. I usually have a hard time thinking of gift ideas for the birthdays of loved ones in my life. And sometimes I do get super stressed trying to find that perfect thing.
Me too. But now with Gift Mode on Etsy, I can search hundreds of gifting personas and find so many incredible items. And I actually just found a custom chalk bag for the adventurer in my life who's into rock climbing.
Not me. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So, whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner in your life or a birthday present for the pickleballer in your life, Gift Mode has you covered.
I'm not the pickleballer. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
You're both smart. Now, I want to say to you, John, so Bowen is sort of on this thing, I think, because he knows he's a smart person and there's another smart person in the chat, which doesn't happen to him frequently because he calls the podcast with me. So now that you're in the chat, he's sort of doing this thing where it's like, I'm not smart.
I do this every week with every guest.
You don't, liar. Likely story. But are you knowledgeable about everything, John? And if so, what are you dumb about?
Ridiculous. First of all, I actually think you're both right. I think Bowen knows how smart Bowen is.
Yes, he does.
And Bowen often does do a performance of aw shucks.
Yes, he does. Thank you for saying it.
As a listener, as a reader.
Thank you.
I'm going to do a thing where I bring race into it.
Okay.
Sure. It's time. 30 minutes in. Let's hear it.
It's time.
I'm pouring myself a drink.
I'm bringing race into it. I think cultures the world over see an Asian person wearing glasses, they go, he's probably smart. And I think...
And you think that's what I've been doing for years?
No. I think that just given me such a boost.
I see.
And it's not one that's fully... I've not taken that vertical to the fullest height.
Here's what I want to say. First of all, I'm realizing I'm doing that. That's why I think you're smart. No, it's... No. Here's... I think the word smart is bad.
Yeah.
It's a bit like saying like weird or crazy. It's a stand-in for a bunch of qualities. Fine.
I love that.
Here's what I think. What my experience of it is that Bowen is very precise in his use of language.
Yes.
In describing your experience, in describing the world, but then you are less precise in how you apply it to yourself. So as not to precisely say the ways in which you think highly of yourself, because it would feel like bragging.
Wow. That's really interesting.
That is really, to use a word.
Smart.
To use a big word, it's very astute.
That's really interesting. First, I quickly want to say, while you were saying that, I did feel silly because what I call Matt all the time is smart. I'm always over here gassing my friend up going, I mean, Matt's one of the smartest people I know.
And then I'm always sort of challenging him. I'm always saying, say more. Say more.
Yeah, say more about that.
Matt is incredibly emotionally and textually intelligent. He's able to interpret something with...
You think I'm textual?
I said textually.
Oh, you think I'm textual?
I think you can watch a movie, a TV show, read a book, and know the exact right takeaway. Not that there's always a right takeaway.
No one is textually attracted to
me. I think it's cool that when you thought he meant textural, that was awesome. instantly pivoted to textual, equally cool.
You think
cool.
I'm textual? I thought you were like cool.
Both were cool and you loved both.
Did I not
you
say
think
textual?
I'm textual?
I you said textual.
Textual.
You said textual.
And I said, you think I'm textural, which I don't think is a word.
I think it might be. It doesn't
textural.
Matter.
I think either way that it works. I think that's very, very astute, John. But you yes. have yet again sort
what
of heard a question that I've asked and said something else. And I'll,
sure.
and that's okay the second time. The third time, it's the famous expression, fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, you're off the pod.
Wow.
You're getting kicked
wow.
out.
As quickly as I came in. And just like that.
And just like that.
And just like that, Big was dead.
Anyway, what subjects do you lack knowledge in? What's your dumb area?
I'm dumb about a lot of things.
Go ahead.
Here are some things I don't know about. Sports.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Music.
Mm-hmm. You don't know about music?
Well, why ask a question if you're going to react like that? What's the... What
touche?
Is that what this was?
I Dude. Love this dance the three of us are doing. Go ahead, say more things. I won't interrupt.
I don't know anything about like cooking, really, or you know, food generally. Wine is baffling to me.
Yeah.
I find it interesting when people know about wine because it seems like a way to stop liking things that cost $30. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like why try so hard to become like disgusted by something reasonable?
Right.
So I don't really understand that. I don't know anything about plants or trees.
Like, oh, that's
we'll
a huge one I don't
we'll
know
be walking,
about, too.
Especially in L.A., I'll be walking with a friend of mine, and they'll say, oh, my God, look at that. It's a bougainvillea or something of that
yeah,
sort.
Yeah.
Or look at that. These are
Jacaranda.
Blossoming.
Yeah.
What
whatever.
Is that? Something. Don't know. Uh-huh. Don't know anything uh-huh. about it.
So far, I think we share a lot of these categories, except for music. But I think you saying a dumb area of yours is music means that you don't, like, does that mean you don't know theory or you don't know, like, what the kids are listening to?
Mm-hmm. I don't, yeah, I would say I don't know what the kids are listening to.
Got it.
I think that's a function of, like, age, like, because I feel
but I never did.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I really just never did. I didn't, I tried when I was a kid to keep up, and I bought a CD. The first two CDs I bought, one was Live Throwing Copper.
What?
Okay.
That I just, it's what the kids were
sorry.
Buying. And
sorry.
I'm explaining. You know what?
We made a, no, I didn't mean to make a face
what?
Either.
What
I'm
is
sorry.
This?
I
what
don't know.
Is this?
This is Lost Coast. You begged to be on.
Stop.
I love you. Keep
you
going. What's the second album
you
bought?
I love you. Keep going.
Right? I do love you. And I get a warm feeling every time I see
what?
You. Now say the second album.
You know what? You can put a nail in a wall and then take it out. But you know what's left behind? I'll tell you. Holes.
A hole. Yeah.
Sorry for the holes I've left
behind.
And
the other one, I didn't hear it. The other one was Matchbox 20. Remember their
okay,
What was that album called? That
it's 3 a.m. I must be lonely.
Because I heard other kids talking about it. And
yeah,
I was
like, great.
Oh. And then I went to the store and I got it and I brought it home and I just like played it just to try to understand what all the fuss was about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not sure.
You don't get Matchbox 20?
I mean, I liked it, but I just didn't. I was like, okay, so this is good. This is
right.
what I'm supposed to like. Okay. I can like this.
Right.
I can get
I think
that done.
We all have had that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good album. It's 3 a.m.
No, that's
on that.
Totally great. 3 a.m. is a classic iconic song. And then, of course, Push.
Push.
I wanna push you around. Well, I will. That one. Really
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Which everyone was obsessed with saying at the time was written from a female perspective. And they were like, isn't it amazing that Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20 did this song, Push, which is, get this, bravely written from a female perspective. And people were saying, this is Matchbox 20 speaking for women who are pushing back against, I guess, like, violence towards women. Like, I'm going to push you back. I'm not going to take disrespect in my relationship. I'm going to push you around. I will. And yet it was just Rob Thomas's sort of male voice singing that.
I feel like you're slowly letting us know that you wrote your college thesis about this album. And you're like, that there's like actually a lot of detail and that you're bringing to the table, which is exciting. But
that's really nice of you that you think I wrote a college thesis. Thank you.
That is such a 90s. We're in the, like this, like
tell us what we're in, King.
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
It. And it's like, it takes until now for something to go from being obviously like, I like, the 90s are now the past. They're just the past. It's unequivocal. They are the past. It's another era. And so then you're a lot, then I think you can talk about it as the past. And so people are more honest about it. And there's like an all-male band writing a song from a woman's perspective, or like James Bond. There were all these articles about how like James Bond is moving past the sexism of its old era. Why? Because he's punching women now. Like, you know, like James Bond can fight a woman. And that's how you know we're kind of moved into the future. And there's just this like, there's this quality to 90s culture that was a bunch of people who were very much mired in sexism and racism and misogyny and all of it, patting themselves on the back, believing that that was all behind them, like it was the end of history. And I love it. I just love the energy of it. And I like the reexamination of it.
Yes. That was a very much the time of one of my favorite things to say, talking about being able to say things. One of my favorite things to say that I never get to say is, and he happens to be gay. And that was the very much, and he happens to be gay era. Like, and guess what? There's also a character that is, can confirm, black. And also, you know what? You know what we're actually doing? Ross actually has a black girlfriend this episode. Deal with it. Yeah. Deal with it. She will get dumped in two episodes.
And just a whole, like a whole political moment about the whole premise being that like gay people were cool with it because they couldn't help it.
Yeah, they didn't want to be like this.
It's not their fault. They just happened to choice. Be like this.
Obviously, they wouldn't choose this life.
And that's the most important reason to accept it.
Yeah.
I think both of you are so, so, so right about this. And I think it's finally time we start moving towards locating this person. But I was just talking this weekend about, but he's gay. He's gay. Sorry, he's blind.
Like, yes.
This, we need to find that newscaster. Mm-hmm. She has done such a service. We talk about her at work every week, me and Celeste and Sarah. We're always like, well, like it's Tuesday. We're like, well, we don't have any ideas. Should we write a sketch that's, but he's gay? Sorry, he's blind. Like, we're like, where is this person? We need to find her.
Yeah.
You know? That is the ultimate news blooper, news fail. Shoot,
grape stomp lady found dead. Maybe literally.
I agree.
I don't know. The grape stomp lady, she sounds really fucked up. It's like a gruesome sound.
I don't know that this is true, but I think she got really hurt, which is like...
She got really hurt.
Which is another thing we've talked on this podcast before about like fail culture and like, you know, when a blooper that goes wrong in a physical way, like... I don't understand watching those like for pleasure, because what you're hearing and seeing are the sounds of
someone
physical pain, often brutalization. And I'll tell you what really hurts me in the heart, because it hurts me physically to even watch. The experience of watching it gives me pain, are skateboarding fail videos. Mm-mm. It is so gnarly.
Yeah.
Skateboarding to me, it is the lowest reward, highest risk pursuit. Especially because of those games. And I played that Tony Hawk game.
Yep.
And oh my God. It was so much fun.
And we met Tony Hawk when he was on your show. I was on the same Love It or Leave It as Tony Hawk.
We met Tony Hawk.
And it was
so... Thank you for saying it so I didn't have to.
Yes, it was surreal.
It was great. And I asked him about this too, which is, in the Tony Hawk game, you do these incredible moves. I mean, you spin up in the air and then you watch real skateboarding. And the things that get applause are just, they're nowhere near the exciting maneuvers that take place in the game. And then people just eat shit.
Yeah, they sure do.
Ooh.
It's no good.
And did he confirm he can't do those magic tricks?
Yes. And he did. He had recently broken his femur.
Yeah, which is the biggest bone in your body.
Not great.
Not one you want to break.
He's doing okay now.
That's good. Okay, so while we're sort of in this area of like, we're talking about 90s culture, we're talking about throwback culture, we're talking about even things like you mentioned, like the formative music you were listening to. It's time to ask the question, which is the central question of the podcast, which is, and I'm honored that we get to ask you this,
John
Lovett, what was the culture that made you say culture was for me?
So I thought about this, and
people always, and talk about filler things that people always say, is they always say, I thought about it's this.
What
about
kind of fucking question. Host are you?
an award-winning one. Keep going.
Oh, what? Oh, listen, we both have Webby's.
Yeah, go ahead. So, go ask me one award.
Is it a Webby?
It's not a Webby.
We actually got snubbed by the Webbies this year.
Snubbed by the Webbies?
Yeah, it was hard.
That sucks.
We're going to the GLAAD Awards on
Saturday.
On Saturday. We're going to lose, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, go on.
Oh, yeah. So I think you have to put these two things together, which is why I'm going to say them both. One is MathNet on Square One, which was a show on public television. It was a show about math that aired when I was a kid. And at the end of every... No, it had a lot of different games and segments. I didn't like those. I didn't watch those. That culture wasn't for me. But at the end of every episode of Square One, there was a segment called MathNet. A math-based parody of Dragnet that had two detectives. I want to remember their names. The guy's name was Joe Frankly. And there were two different female detectives. It started with, I believe, Pat Monday. And then Pat Monday left the show and was replaced by, like, Kate Tuesday.
Math.
And they would use math to solve crimes. Like, there was a man in a gorilla suit who robbed a bank. How far could he have gotten between when the first witness saw and the second witness saw him? And it would always have the, like, and it would be about two detectives using math to solve crimes. Loved it. Very important to me. The other is a specific scene, which is a scene when a sad Miss Piggy returns to the department store in Muppets Take Manhattan, and Joan Rivers cheers her up by giving her a makeover.
A makeover. Oh,
but they have so much fun doing the makeover that they get fired.
They get fired. Yeah.
And storm out of the department store laughing. And I think if you put those two things together, it really explains the whole trajectory.
That is wonderful. Now, I'm less familiar with MathNet. I ask you, did it make you want to be a mathematician? Did it make you good at math? Do you feel that maybe you didn't care about math so much before?
Did it uncover a love of math, or did it affirm an existing love of math?
I think it affirmed and celebrated a love of math.
You love math.
Love math to this day.
I'm looking at this. There was Math Court, Math Man, The Mathematics of Love, Angled It. So Matt and I in the 90s did not grow up with Square One on PBS, because this was PBS. Okay, and can I just say, before we move on to Miss Piggy and Joan Rivers, there is something about edutainment that is, like, the most politically interesting, impactful kind of entertainment that is probably also the hardest thing to write and generate and shoot and make interesting and entertaining. Like, there's almost something, like, inspiring to me where I'm like, oh, I would be totally happy and I bet completely fulfilled just working in that lane. Like, if I made edutainment, good edutainment, if I made that my life's mission, I bet I would be the happiest version of myself.
Yeah, it is just so hard to, the level of sophistication you're supposed to hit when it's not for you. And we understand, and we all understand, especially now, that, like, hey, there's something wrong if you are trying to write for an audience that you're not a part of, right? Whether it's like, I would never pitch a show about, like, Black culture, or I would never pitch a show about, I think I wouldn't even pitch a show about, like, lesbian culture, right? I would just, I would feel uncomfortable trying to, like, embody that. That doesn't seem right to me. But adults pitch show about children's culture all the time. We don't let children write them, which is something I think this strike is all about, which is letting children
letting kids work. Mini rooms.
That's what the mini rooms are. Just tiny, tiny writers. Children. Very short men. Yeah, short women. Room. Very small people.
It's got to stop.
And it's got to stop.
They should be paid.
Or be bigger.
Yes, yes, yes. Matt and I have worked in this sector where, through Story Pirates, we were literally adapting. And listen, it was, like, great stuff. But this is really interesting because I also think it's not super... It doesn't always yield the best results when people try to write for an audience that they aspire towards either. You can sort of, like, smell that pretty easily and go, I don't really care for this. Like, I can tell that the people making this show are trying to, like, go up some sort of, like, tier or cast. And I'm like, I don't think that's working.
Well, it's inauthentic. It's like something trying to be more sophisticated than is, or something trying to be more political than the person writing it naturally is. Yeah.
So just to marry your two answers then, because you have this, you know, you're nodding towards this math net and we're talking about edutainment, and then we're going to transition into the Miss Piggy Joan Rivers makeup moment of it all. Were you a Sesame Street child?
Yes. I was a Sesame Street child. Did you have Mr. Wizard?
No, so
I think we had Mr. Wizard.
What unfortunately happened around my age was Barney really took over.
Yeah.
And Barney is like, and this is, I'm not disrespecting, but Barney was more just like a narrative about the kids and Barney. And it was, I guess maybe it was teaching like moral lessons, but Sesame Street was fun because it felt like a really fun educational program that was so disguised in the interesting characters and the fun dynamics that you didn't even realize you were learning. Whereas like, you know, Barney was just, I think, trying to be like, oh, Selena Gomez helped Demi Lovato tie her shoe. They're right. Friends. This is what friendship is.
Barney taught you how to like hang out, I guess. Yeah.
Barney taught you how to chill. It's actually roller coaster number 7.
Barney taught you how to chill.
Yeah, that I feel like that is the difference. I think that's like the 5-year difference, because that was after.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like I think I got the bottom of the barrel of like the 80s, like public television, those original studios where it's like, this is just an old social studies teacher in a house somewhere, and we're just going to shoot him showing people how ice melts.
I love that.
And like, that's what I got. And then Barney's like, I'm going to fuck this whole economy.
Yeah,
I'm going to rock. You people don't understand how annoying this can be and work.
Barney was...
You don't understand the sounds that kids are actually looking for.
100%. And Barney was so obsessed with being a brand. Barney was brand forward. The Barney brand was so inescapable.
Yeah. Barney also was really big on like teaching you how to clean up after yourself.
Get a grip. Get bent, Barney.
Get bent. But it's also like Barney can't have its cake and eat it too, because Barney's like, you should clean up after yourself. But then also, like, in the back of my mind, I feel like Barney was trying to teach everybody about, like, making it in this world so that you don't have to clean up after yourself and you can pay somebody to do it. I don't know where that's coming from, but I feel that to be true.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I think that was the Barney energy. Look, I've always said this, Barney is hustle culture. And
Yes.
And a lot of people don't talk about it.
Absolutely.
As was Thomas the Tank Engine. Thomas the Tank Engine was hustle culture for sure.
Really? How so?
You know, it was very important to be a train and to do your job as a train. If you didn't do your job as a train, there were consequences.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, how interesting. Mm-hmm. Consequence culture. That's major.
And there's something so cynical. Mm-hmm. They're on tracks.
Yeah.
And they are just linear. That's it. They can go forward or they can go back.
Yeah.
Do you have any comment on when Sesame Street had to cut out Katy Perry because of her breasts? Do you have comment on that?
I'm sorry, I'm not aware of that. I don't.
Well, the most famous episode of Sesame Street no one ever saw was when Katy Perry guested on Sesame Street, and even though she was wearing a full shirt, everyone said, we can't have this. Her boobs are too big. She can't be on Sesame Street. And they never showed the episode. But you can watch it on YouTube, I guess. I think she sang like a silly version of Hot and Cold.
Mm. It seems like there's a digital fix.
Mm. Yeah.
Back then, maybe not. I think in 2010, we didn't have that technology.
Well, they could have just put in like a bush, you know, like a... Like just like a little plant or something, you know.
Yeah, she
like
could have been singing plant behind a bush.
But by the way, no one should feel bad for Katy Perry. In the end, the ending to her story is that she went to the coronation and no one else did. Like the people who called in to complain did not.
And even before that, she's done pretty well.
I think so.
Well, she's a huge star, Katy Perry.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows her. Her stuff's all over the place.
Can I say, before we move into the Miss Piggy of it all, I've written down one word on a piece of paper, and it's the word weird. Because when you said earlier that you feel like smart is a bad word, dumb is a bad word, weird is a bad word, I'm going to push back on weird. Okay. I think it's actually really fun to say about someone, she's weird. How is that person? Like, I've never met them. Weird.
And I love having fun with words. And I think we all do.
Aww. Yeah.
I think weird and crazy and dumb.
Crazy is problematic.
Crazy's not great. Yeah.
Yes. So crazy has issues beyond what actually I understood the reason to stop saying crazy, and I thought it was a good reason.
But it didn't persuade you.
Well, what persuaded me that it wasn't just good for that reason alone Right. Uh-huh. Like, yes, I understand why it could be considered ableist. And I would say, you know what I would say? Intellectually, my heart wasn't in it. And I think what...
That's huge. And I think
what got me all the way there was not just the way in which it was sort of using this sort of, you know, word about mental health in a pejorative way. It's that so often it is just laziness to avoid actually... And it's two people assuming they both know what they mean by crazy, but they don't. It's just a stand-in for a bunch of different things. And actually forcing yourself to find more specific ways to talk about why you're bothered leads to saying something better.
That's interesting. And so you feel the same way about weird, where it's a stand-in for something else. But I think you're sort of... Your hang-ups about these words, I think it's kind of tied to them mostly being monosyllabic, with the exception of crazy. Weird, smart,
dumb.
Let's say dumb. Let's great. I just use the word great, and I don't feel awesome about it. I don't feel great about it. So I feel like, but is that it? Like, I think, are we creating some sort of bias towards multisyllabic words? Because I don't always think
they're... Well, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to do that.
What I've had to walk back for the last several years, because when I listen back to myself from years ago, I go, why am I throwing all these disgusting SAT words around? That's so annoying.
It's jejun.
It's jejun. And I feel like sometimes dumb, weird, smart, sometimes those are okay.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I'm not the word police.
You're not the word police.
I'm not the word police.
But this is the words episode. And actually the title of EP, that's what they mean by minimum staffing, like tiny people with John Lovett.
Words. Yeah, that's great. Let's see if we beat it. I like words.
Let's see if we beat it.
So far, we have it. John isn't happy
Here's
with it.
Here's the thing. We're not allowed to do this.
We're on the guild. We can't beat something while we're on strike.
Do you have a statement of support for the guild? Because that's someone that a lot of people look up to.
And make really different ones for West and East.
Look, I think that...
No, we're in trouble.
I'm very supportive of the writers. I hope they get what they want. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of not letting computers write scripts. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll do a very good job. I think 100% of the tweets by the writers are good and none of them are over the top. And I think anyone who's saying that doesn't support the writers. And all the people secretly, all the people who correctly and support the writers in this strike, but then also have little side texts about the tweets that they think are the most ridiculous, I consider that being a scab and that needs to stop.
Wow. I think people are going to change their behavior now. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
So Miss Biggie and Joan Rivers.
When
they played with makeup together, what was it that got you? Was it the joy? Was it the joy and the fun they were having? And what was obviously sort of a, you know, fun moment on set?
It's that it starts with Miss Piggy. She's at a low.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I believe she's just been rejected by Kermit in some way.
Which was insane. I mean, the amount of times that he treated her like shit. I think because he's insecure and you know it's small.
Ugh, yeah.
Kermit is not a good guy.
No. He's a narcissist.
He plays the banjo?
Cool.
Whatever.
It's ridiculous. But she comes in. She's so beside herself. And they slowly, Joan Rivers starts giving her this makeover. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until they're... The other thing that I didn't know what it was, but it features more prominently in children's cartoon like Quicksand, but it's the makeup poof where you poof someone's face with, I guess, foundation or just powder. And it was like just this big poof and you just get poofed. Yep. The cartoons would always do that to each other for makeup. Yep. Like if Bugs Bunny was putting makeup on Elmer Fudd, it would be a big poof and it had that.
Yeah.
And then the snooty manager comes over. And he's disgusted by this display, but they're having such a good time, they don't care. And he says, you're both fired. And then they, you know, Joan Rivers basically mimics the Muppet-style laugh, which is like the head
to
back,
toss your head back,
mouth open, that, which is the best. And they just laugh their ways out of the store. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
Amazing.
Not until the film Babylon was there
Oh my God. Was there an anti-retail scene?
Was there a scene that starts from zero and ends at 100? That's what I would say.
Wait, what scene in Babylon are you talking about? The elephant?
Every scene in the first 2 hours of the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
In what way did this contribute to the trajectory?
I just have Miss Piggy energy. I just do.
Yeah.
You do?
You know?
You're violent?
Violent.
Abusive.
Well, Miss Piggy's a violent woman. She often will say, hi-ya!
Violent.
I do that.
I'm on record on this podcast. There is never an instance where Miss Piggy says, hi-ya! That I'm not laughing
till
the cows draw in.
She also, Miss Piggy, I believe, also chases down a purse snatcher in Muppets Take Manhattan.
And yes,
I believe she
does.
Mm-hmm. I believe she does a hi-ya.
I hope would hope.
Amazing.
She's very declared. She's always kicking people out, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I think in Muppets Christmas Carol, she tells Michael Caine, you know, when Scrooge wakes up the next morning, on Christmas morning, and goes to Cratchit's house, she goes, what? Like, she is very, like, she's there to be like, Scrooge is not allowed here. Which, the only character in that movie, by the way, in that story, in that reimagined story, who's like, fuck you, Scrooge, get out of my house.
Yes!
Miss Piggy.
Hold on a second. Piggy. Does Lorne know you have Miss Piggy?
I haven't pitched myself to do a Miss Piggy, but I'm waiting for the
that
right like, cold open
moment.
That
might be the next moment for you.
Maybe. But I think, look, me saying hi-ya, an Asian.
I think we're overthinking it. Weird. You're weird, Bowen.
Weird. I'm smart. Anyway.
You're smart and weird.
Hey. I think you're both smart, weird, and crazy.
Smart, weird, and crazy is the title of the app. I'm sorry, that's what it is. And smart, weird, and crazy, because they're more descriptive than words, because they actually are words. Smart, weird, and crazy with John Lovett. And that's the title of the episode.
And that's exciting.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly. Bubbly Bursts.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you have any thoughts on current culture that you are dying to get out there? Like, what's the shows that you're consuming? I'm assuming you're a Succession person.
I am a Succession person, and I'll just say it. I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's smart. I think it's well written.
I'll just say it is a great sort of phrase too. Anyway, keep going.
I'll just say it.
I love it.
You think Sarah Snook is good?
Yeah, I do. I'll say it. I think Sarah Snook is good. I like that none of the American accents are right. And that's okay because they're from another layer of society where maybe they are wrong up there. Maybe they don't sound like us up there where they are.
I don't know if you listened to the Succession podcast with Kara Swisher that she hosts, but she was talking to Brian Cox and he said that he was irate during the first season when, like, episodes and episodes in, he realized that the character was actually from Scotland. He had thought that they decided against that. Like, he was like, oh, the character's not from Scotland. That's not part of the history I'm playing. That's not the character I'm playing. And then he saw literally a document that was printed out as a prop that I think stated Logan Roy's birthplace as Scotland. And he, in the podcast episode, I don't know, I can't necessarily find where Brian Cox's sense of humor starts and ends, because it all is kind of delivered in this Brian Coxian way where it's the kind of person that's in your life, which is a person that I fear, which is where you think you're kidding because you are, and then all of a sudden they reveal that they're no longer kidding. And like, it's just people that have, like, there's an absence of a wink or the absence of putting effort into letting you know we are changing course, or actually, no, but seriously, I really mean this. I don't know. I can't find where it starts and ends with him. I don't know what he's kidding about. So he could legitimately be on this podcast episode, which was the third episode, which of course followed the episode where his character dies. But he is seeming upset, but also it's like he could be kidding. But also I would not want to be the person.
I bet he's not kidding.
Around. Yeah, probably not.
He also strikes me as someone where he has a sense of humor, but you know that even if you were just at your absolute best and you were firing in all cylinders, that only half would land.
Right.
That there would just, you'd be doing a lot of, I'm just kidding. You'd be saying, I'm just kidding a lot. Mm-hmm. And that obviously stinks.
It stinks.
Yeah. Here's my thought, is that he seems to be someone who, like, rails against earnestness, like the way he, like, hates Jeremy Strong's style, but then he will also be earnest himself all the time. Mm. Does that make sense? Yeah. I feel like there's no irony in any expression that he sort of puts out there.
Also, like, I think that's something that we forget about actors in general when we call them self-important and self-serious, is that they have to have a sense of play, because that is intrinsic and inherent to even wanting to act in the first place. Like, actors without a sense of play, I don't understand that, nor have I really met... Oh, wow, Bowen is smiling a smile.
Nothing. It makes me think of Patty. Patty Harrison, who, like... kind of overuses that phrase in, like, a deliberate
sense
way.
Of play.
A sense of play. I mean, there's, like, she's, like, posted Instagram grid posts where she's like, what was great about this set was that there was really a sense of play. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
No, it is funny. But I'm saying is, like, the set of Succession feels like it would be a weird one, because it feels like the methods there are all very different. You know what I mean? It's like you have Brian Cox fully dragging Jeremy Strong, like, in the press, and Kieran Culkin kind of doing the same thing, being like, yeah, it's annoying when he wants to not rehearse.
First of all, I have 2 points I want to make. Point number one, I think it's cool, Matt, but that you approach this moment by saying, I'm just not sure I respect Brian Cox's approach to acting.
No, it's not. That's not what I said at all. What I'm saying is that I think
his
sense of humor and his, like, state of being as being, like, rigid or being, like, sort of, like...
But
Brian Cox has to be... He has to have a sense of humor. He's on Succession.
Definitely.
You look at his career. He's done a ton. He's also very funny, even if maybe in the moment he's not meaning to be funny or comedic purely in nature. But, like, this idea that even, like, Jeremy Strong takes himself so seriously all the time, like, can't be true, because... Like, you have to have that curiosity and that sense of imagination and, yes, play Drag Me Patty Harrison to even want to do this.
No. It's not a drag.
I think
I'm ready to share the story on the pod.
Okay. Share it.
As a way of like supporting the idea that Jeremy Strong actually is like has a sense of play and irony.
Okay.
And I think Matt's heard this story before, I think. But I've been telling it and I've been really literally dining out on this story for a while now. And
this is its public debut.
This is its public debut.
I am very excited.
So the most recent season of Nora from Queens shot at the same studio as this season of Succession. The Nora from Queens production office was pretty close to the Succession stages in their production office. And as we famously know, Jeremy Strong is the method actor. And at one point, Jeremy walks into the Nora from Queens production office and says, "Excuse me, do you know where the bathroom is?" And then someone in the office was like, "Yeah, it's just down the hall to the left." He goes, "Thank you so much." He leaves. Matt, you've heard this story before, right?
No, I don't think I have.
You haven't? Oh no. My God. Okay.
You've been dining out with other people.
Yeah.
Likely story.
So Jeremy leaves. 10 minutes pass, and then a PA from Succession comes into the office and goes, "Hi, was Jeremy just in here?" And they were like, "Yeah, he was. He went to the bathroom." And then they go, this PA goes, "Did he ask where it was? Did he come here to ask you where the bathroom was?" And they were like, "Yeah, why?" And then the PA says, "He has a scene today where he has to ask someone where the bathroom is."
You're kidding.
And I think that is method to such a ridiculous degree that like he must be like in on the joke.
Yeah, he must be giggling inside internally a little bit.
I love that. I am glad. I just love that there's somebody who's just like, "I need to later ask someone to go to the bathroom. I need to fully internalize and understand the experience. So I'm going to drink.
I can't access that.
I can't access it. So I'm going to drink a gallon of Gatorade and then go to an unfamiliar part of this lot. And I'm going to use that experience so that I can draw on it later." I fucking love that. The other thing too, so all of these actors, that are like doing a serious, like, Kendall is a leading man, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, there'll be a billboard on Sunset for some movie mm-hmm. where a handsome male movie star will play a soldier.
Yeah.
And this is a person who has, you know, their life extends from like creation organic to you know, it's like they live a very small and fancy life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they are going to take on the persona of a member of the military and mm-hmm. do things like, "Follow me, gents," and like, yeah, bup, and like just do gun stuff and mm-hmm. Military man bravado things. Stuff.
Behaviors.
And if you're doing something like that, there has to be an ability to shut off the sense of, like, you can't have a sense of play, actually. And for that day, you have to be completely serious. You have to believe, you have to be so earnest. Because if even a tiny crack of how ridiculous this is mm-hmm. got in, don't you think the whole thing would melt like cotton candy? Like, you just, to do that requires such a level of belief and commitment. Like, it seems impossible.
Sure. Having not been in that situation, I feel like that you must be right.
So when I was a speechwriter, Jeremy Strong played a speechwriter in Lincoln. Basically years and years ago, he reached out through someone and I got lunch with him and he just asked me a lot of questions about speechwriting and like very specific, like, "What did you feel? What did you think? What is this like? What's your reaction to this?" And I completely forgot about it. I just like forgot that it ever happened. And then I saw Lincoln and he has a part in Lincoln. I didn't even remember. I wouldn't even have remembered his name. It just would have been like, "Oh, that actor who reached out about being in Lincoln." And then years later, when that New Yorker story came out, was said that, like, you know, Jeremy Strong has this method approach to acting. And I was like, "Oh my God, I was a part of his process."
Wow.
For Lincoln.
Wow.
He was perfectly nice.
Did you meet up with him for lunch or something?
Yes, we got lunch. And when the article...
Mendocino Farms?
Yeah, did you go to Mendocino? Did you go to Creation Organic?
This was in D.C. This was back when I was in control. This was a D.C.
Founding Farmers
lunch spot. Maybe it might have been a Founding Farmers, just for one example, but it could have been. Uh-huh.
It's the only restaurant I
know. I'll tell you something about Founding Farmers.
Okay.
And here's what I'll say.
Uh-oh.
They took a lot of pride in saying that their building was LEED Green certified. Always fucking stuffy in there. It's like, what are we doing here? This is what it means. This is the future.
It was like a glass building. Let's get the air moving in these big glass buildings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't tell me you're the future and that it's all great. And then everyone's going to think that this is what it is. The future is stuffy. And the future is not stuffy.
It might be stuffy.
Maybe a little stuffy. The future might be a little bit. Look, hey, a lot of good stuff coming down the pike. Totally excited about a lot of it, but the future might just be
Real Culture number 60. The future might be a little stuffy.
Just a little stuffy.
Like Brian Cox.
I think we're getting really sort of spirited right now. I think all three of us are ready to like really get polemic about something and launch. What do you say?
Okay.
It feels right.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly. Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is a moment in time because it's the I Don't Think So Honey segment of the John Lovett episode of Las Culturistas, and this is sure to be fire. So I Don't Think So Honey is a 60-second segment that we do on this podcast where we take a minute, i.e. 60 seconds, to rail against something in culture that needs to be dragged. I am going to keep it on Succession. I actually have a thing about Succession that is an unpopular opinion, and I'm just going to go for it.
Okay, this is Matt Rogers's I Don't Think So Honey about Succession. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So Honey, Cousin Greg. I think this is television's best current show. I Don't Think So Honey, Cousin Greg. I think it's one bit, and I think that it is funny, but I'm waiting for the Cousin Greg of it all to pay off. I don't think so, honey, that it will, because isn't that antithetical to the whole Cousin Greg thing? You know what I mean? I understand like his relationship to them is like mandatory and arbitrary and like he is the comedic foil, but like I want to see this pay off in a big way, and if it doesn't, I don't think so, honey. I almost want to see Cousin Greg win the whole thing, or for Cousin Greg to reveal that quote unquote Cousin Greg is like a long con, because, and it's nothing to do with Nicholas Braun, I just don't think so, honey. The Cousin Greg of it all. I'm just waiting for it to become more dynamic than it is right now. It's a bit in a brilliant show where there's a lot of complexity and it feels like there's not a lot there. That's all I'll say. I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute. Wow, this is interesting. I agree. And anytime I see him with Tom, I'm like, get Greg with someone else. Let's see another like permutation of characters here.
You want to know what it is? It's like, it's in a show where the characters are so real and I really feel like I understand all the shades. I just don't believe he's that dumb. Tonally, it's the only thing about the show where I'm like not landing anywhere. Me personally, like if I'm to compare it to Mad Men, that's what like kind of makes Mad Men a little superior for me if I'm to compare the two, is that I feel like that there was not a false step.
I need to speak. I need to speak on this.
That's fine. The floor is yours.
Speak.
Succession to me is actually making up for. So Mad Men by the end, it was just like, listen, I get it. They're on a journey. Put Peggy and Don in a fucking room together. Yeah. Why are they at different agencies? This is a TV show. Get them together. And with Succession, at least I agree that we need like, there's like, you want to see great. Like we've seen a lot of Jerry and George. Show me George and Elaine. You know?
Yes.
Show me, you know, like, let's get some pairings going on.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
This is exactly
what
I'm
saying. But I'm glad that they're keeping them together, because in Mad Men, it was so frustrating by the end because it was like a Don Peggy episode, a two-hander.
The suitcase.
Perfect. Perfect example.
And I'm always saying that. And I'm always saying that is something I'm always saying. End of thought.
I was going to say the reason it's really pronounced this season that like Greg doesn't tonally really working for me because I think Tom is less of a comedic foil to the siblings.
Mm.
Like Tom's not as funny as he was in prior seasons for like perfectly valid reasons. And so I think a lot of the comedy is landing on Greg. But I think this is just coming out of like Logan dying. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the funniest things that's happened all season is Tom dragging Greg for the date that he brought. I mean, the ludicrously capacious bag. So it's like that, maybe that's why we're seeing so much of it, or it's not evolving necessarily, is because that is the excuse for Tom to be the funny character still. And then, you know, it almost feels like now that we're at the part of the show where we have the promise of the premise, which is the succession is upon us, maybe that sort of just focuses the narrative so on the three of them that there's not as much opportunity for Cousin Greg to be colliding with them that much, or for them to be focusing on his dynamics with anyone but Tom, because that's just what's realistic.
Yeah.
And I also would say in terms of the Mad Men of it all, it's like, I actually disagree. I think Peggy quitting is actually all the more powerful, knowing that they really no longer had a relationship after that. That's what keeps me going back to that episode where, you know, she goes, takes a step towards him in his office and holds her hand out. And then he kisses her hand and she says, don't be a stranger. And she leaves. Like that really was kind of the end for them. And I think that's strengthened when you look at the series as a whole, because she really left. So I get what you're saying in terms of what we want for the characters in terms of our viewing experience. But to me, it was like they were following through with what they had decided to do in a realistic way. Whereas maybe that's what's holding Cousin Greg back in this season, literally for the same reason. It's just not working as well for me.
I just want to say that it wasn't until what you just said that I put the pieces together and realized that they're doing a Succession.
Oh, yeah.
That they're in it.
It's a show about Succession.
Oh, the promise of the premise,
which Bowen smiled the same way. When you say promise of the premise,
and I'm always saying
it really
that.
Gets a reaction. Well, it really gets a reaction.
Because Matt recently on a project that we can no longer work on, as long as the strike is happening, he used it to great effect and in a way that was actually quite helpful. Promise of the premise.
Yeah, well, it's actually a Sudi Green thing. But I thought that it's a perfect way to say. I mean, the promise of the premise. The premise of Succession is he's going to die. Then he'll pass the company on. Which is, again, so this is a very, like, I think, mom thing to say. Like, my mom, when he died on Succession in that third episode, there was like a contingency of people, and my mom was one of them, who was like, well, you know, we never saw the body. I don't think he's dead. I don't think he's dead. Hey, you know, we didn't see it. I'm like, this isn't like V, mom. It's not Lost. You know, it's not like, it's, this isn't like
V.
This
oh
isn't like mid-aughts network television where it's like they come back from the life. It's not Revenge. Like, he's
this isn't
dead.
The 4400.
Yeah, it's certainly not the 4400 and never will be. But that was what was so funny to me is I was just like, no, like, if you really think about this show, this needed to happen early in this last season because now we really need to see it come to a head. The promise of the premise. Hmm. There will be a succession.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. This just makes me want to watch The Suitcase.
Oh, maybe we will, Bo.
Maybe we will. Hmm.
All right. This is Bo and Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. Are you ready, Bo?
I'm ready.
His time will begin now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, me becoming emotionally invested in ads for phone video games where it's always violence being inflicted upon a woman and or her child. It's all, have you seen these ads where it's like for an iPhone game where like the person's house is flooded or the person's kitchen is on fire? What's the right tool that you should use? Is it the fire hydrant? Is it the comb? And naturally, you pick the fire hydrant. Am I crazy? These are phone ads that like we've all, the algorithm serves to all of us, right? Okay, Gardenscapes. Producer Becca is saying Gardenscapes. Yes. It's always about a woman and her child being like out of a house basically. And that is, it's a premise that like kind of takes you out of the world of the game a little bit, right? It like you snap back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity. I want my games to be, I want to play Outer Rims and not be reminded that there is a housing crisis in our country.
And that's 1 minute.
I think Outer Rims is a different game. Outer Rims is a very special game.
Outer Rims is OnlyFans.
I'm using Outer Rims as a perfect example to illustrate that like any video game should not be so distressing that I like witness a young mother, a new mother being like having to like deal with a house flood. And that's what all these games are about.
I don't like that at all.
Is Outer Rims a game that actually exists, or are you referring to what I said about Outer Wilds?
Outer Wilds. I meant to say Outer Wilds.
I wasn't sure if it was.
The Outer Rims is, Bowen? It's a cocktail at Oga's Cantina that we just had in Galaxy's Edge. We were just in Disney World and there's a drink.
Pre-strike.
It's a tequila. Pre-strike.
We don't support the studios.
There's a drink called the Outer Rim and that's what he's thinking of.
And every guy there will ask you, do you know where the Outer Rim is? And we're like, okay, no, don't ask us that.
You want to get an Outer Rim and then have a drink? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Depends. Daddy. How big's your blaster?
Oh, you a
gunner or a navigator in the cockpit, hun? Tell me, darling, how you fly the Falcon.
The navigator's the bottom? I guess you are when you're bottoming, you are sort of like taking the joystick, as it were.
There is a ride. So I don't know, have you been to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge? Are you a Star Wars person?
I am a Star Wars person. I haven't been to Galaxy's Edge just yet.
So when you get on the Millennium Falcon ride, they look at you and you're going to get put in the cockpit. And then the person who's running the shit looks to you and says, my top two are pilots. My second two are gunners. In the back, y'all are the navigators. And when they look at you and they say you're a gunner, you do feel like a top.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. No, that's a powerful feeling.
Totally.
That's a powerful feeling.
Okay. Bowen and I were actually the pilots. Remember when we flew the ship, Bo? We didn't do good.
We were pretty bad. But okay, producer Becca is making me feel like I'm not crazy.
You are not crazy, said producer Becca.
You're not crazy.
I know the word is non grata right now, but I think that this game is popping up. The ads for these kinds of games are popping up everywhere. And just look out for them. And I might have like uttered that into your algorithms and I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, now I bet it will happen and I will tell you when it does.
Yeah, there are you get a lot of ads for like these sort of games where you have to shoot a bullet and it bounces and bounces and then hits the wrong person. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes, it's that.
And I don't think those games are real, by the way.
They are.
I think these games are, well, I think you download them and then the game itself is different than what they're advertising a lot of the time.
Yes, often of lesser graphical quality.
Yeah.
Not as fun. There's no promise of the premise delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
There you go. Okay, I think
this is time.
It's time for John Lovitz. I Don't Think So, Honey. I'll time you. This is, are you ready?
Wait, I'm going to take a sip of water.
Okay.
Yeah, lubricate.
It's going to be good. This is John Lovitz It's so right. This is John Lovitz. I don't think so, honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Book blurbs.
Oh.
What are we doing here? What are we doing here? First of all, no one's read these fucking books. No one has read them. These quotes are not real.
Yeah.
I couldn't put down this unforgettable novel. Mm-hmm. It was propulsive and insightful. People don't talk that way. No. They only write that way when they're writing book blurbs. Also, it feels a little desperate, books. A message to books, the message being, show some confidence, all right?
Oh, my God.
We are living in a post-Nanette world, okay?
15
I don't know what that means. The point is, when capitalism smells fear, it bucks the rider. Books, we understand that the deck is stacked against
Five
you.
Seconds.
A quote from Jake Tapper isn't going to save books.
No.
We got to do better. We have to think bigger. Books, blurbs, I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute.
You know,
wow.
Do they move units?
I think it depends.
Does anyone know what these things are doing? Mm. Are people at the airport turning them over and saying, I wasn't going to buy this book, but now I am because Mindy Kaling says it's a fun read?
I was just
going
to say, my name is going to be Mindy Kaling, my poll.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't know. I guess it would depend on the person. Like if I flipped it over and it was like a rave from Tinsley Mortimer, I'd be like, well, huh? Like, but when it's someone like Mindy Kaling, who you get the sense does a lot of these.
What? Oh my God.
I don't know why I even said any of that.
Have you requested blurbs? Have you requested blurbs though yourself?
When I've had to written a book?
Well, I mean,
why don't you write a book?
Impossible.
When you write a book, let's say you have one written and it's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
If your publisher is like, we have to get blurbs for this, John.
Of course.
Okay.
Will you ask us?
Sure. Yeah, probably. I'll ask one of you at least.
Well, I know who's getting cut.
It'll be joint. It'll be joint.
Yeah, we'll do it together.
It'll be joint. It'll be both of you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It'll say MR colon. I loved this book. BY colon. I agree. I thought it was incredible. MR. Isn't he a smart, funny, kind of weird?
Oh my God.
Yo, guy.
Oh my goodness.
Have you had a nice time on this episode?
I would say it was a little house forward, but other than
forward.
Are you feeling like a little shy? Are you feeling in the post-coital that maybe you shouldn't have talked about the house that much?
It's a lot of house time.
You know what I'm excited about? The group chat after this.
Ooh.
I'm going to text you both on a thread.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I can tell that you're really happy about it. By the way, you smiled and looked askance.
Well, I was like, when someone says, oh, group text, I immediately think, oh, there's a group chat where I'm being spoken of.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You mustn't think that way.
You mustn't think this way.
You mustn't think that way.
I think whenever someone's mentioning a group chat in your presence, that's an invitation.
Yeah.
Okay. And that feels really nice. And that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
That's a really warm and good feeling.
That's what this is, too.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned because the text is coming. Listen, the podcasts are Love It and Leave It and
Love It
America.
And Leave It.
What?
Love It or Leave It.
I say Love It and Leave It?
You said Love It and Leave It. You did.
Love It or Leave It.
They'll find it. The searching will do its thing.
You just type in, you type in the man's name and it's a treasure trove. Let's just say that.
He'll have a book coming out sometime.
Yeah, that's a shame if you don't write a book.
Maybe. We'll see. Hey,
wow.
Stay tuned. Watch this space.
Oh, that's a good
one,
too.
Watch the space.
I think we scooped something,
And we're
too.
Going on tour. Love It or Leave It's going on tour.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Coming to a city near you.
Coming to a city near you. The stage will have a rug and a couch on it.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Very exciting.
Maybe like a plush chair. You know, a table for water.
I love it. If I'm in the audience and I'm looking at that on stage, I'm comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel cozy.
You know you're in for a good time.
Listen, this has been so fun. We do end every episode with a song. And even though you feel you have musical knowledge that is like limited, I want you to pick the song that we sing on the way out.
You want me to pick the song that
you
sing?
That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. Just like any song.
And we'll sing it. And that'll be the last thing that's heard on your episode of Las Culturistas before you return.
Exile.
By Taylor.
I don't know it that well.
So many times. Wait, oh my God, Taylor.
Taylor.
So bye.
Bye.
Bye. There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of six fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
You know that I feel like it's really important to express yourself.
I know that about you.
You got to put your true self out there, okay? And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do just that.
Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean, literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know, it doesn't get more comfortable than Croc clogs and sandals. They're just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Some say Titanic is the best gay nightclub in the city, and those people are me.
And me. So set sail with this kooky crazy off-Broadway hit and get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.